Just make me sound smarter than I'm probably going to come across.
That voice you're hearing is Scott Porch, and he writes
about TV and comedy.
And for this episode, I also talked with Julie Seba.
I am a comedy journalist for about 14, maybe going on 15 years now. And it is how I make my entire living, and probably will be the only way I will ever make my entire living.
And although we'll be spending our time talking about CISO and this sort of streaming comedy era that we're in, I first wanted to know how they got into their fields. But first, welcome to the CISO C-Show. I'm Andrew Steven.
I always grew up reading and writing. Even, you know, earliest memories, I was always doing like the Book It Club and winning all the pizzas.
What's the Book It Club?
Oh, this was a grade school endeavor to get kids to read. You read so many books and got stars that you would amass on a Pizza Hut pen. And when I think you had 6, maybe 8 stars, you would get a free pizza. So that's how they got kids to read back in the day.
It was pizza.
Rewarding them with pizza. I was always doing all those programs. And when I went to college, I joined the journalism program at University of Missouri.
I'm a freelance writer. And so I write a lot of different places. And comedy is just one of those things I've been able to find an audience for, and have got, you know, pretty good access and pretty good credibility with being able to get people to say yes to interviews.
My senior year, Dave Attell came to the University of Missouri and did a show. And I interviewed him beforehand on the phone and then got to go backstage at the show. And then he got me and a bunch of my friends drunk at the journalism bar across the street on Jägermeister, because this was the height of Insomniac.
The height of class is Jägermeister.
People were sending Jäger shots from all over the bar, going crazy. I woke up on my friend Dan's bathroom floor vomiting and thinking, you know, there's something to this comedy thing. There's an artistry here, but it's not really being covered in any mainstream way that I've seen in Missouri.
What was it about that when you woke up on the bathroom floor? What was it about? I mean, I guess the bigger question is, why comedy?
There was something about a person standing on stage with just a microphone and their thoughts. And I didn't feel that journalism was actually reflecting that. And all the attention was on films and music, where there's so much more machinery and there's so much more marketing, and you also have a million people that you're working with. But when it's just a person on stage with their brain, and they can actually change how an audience thinks and affect society in that way, I just thought there was something really fascinating about that that was being underserved.
And I think this is why many of us are drawn to comedy. I mean, Look at the rise of comedy podcasts, many of which are just a comedian talking into a mic and just sharing real life stories and intimate moments of their lives and connecting with an audience.
Yeah, every sort of genre has got its own sort of social media affinities, but I think for comedy, it's definitely podcasts. For sports, it seems like Twitter, and different shows have, you know, different kinds of followings. But yeah, comedy is very, very podcast driven.
I mean, I definitely think the internet has gotten comedy directly to a lot more people, for sure. So you can watch it and consume it in your home, on your phone, in the subway, et cetera, et cetera. And you start to learn more about not only the comedy form itself, but with podcasts and, you know, behind the scenes web series and all that sort of stuff, you learn about the actual process and the world of what it actually takes to get to the point where you can be on stage and have the different perspective and these kind of life-changing points of view. And now that the internet has allowed for everyone to have an opinion, everyone kind of does have an opinion now about comedy, and you can argue about it like people, I guess, still do with music and films, and it's much more widely accepted as an art form now, for sure, and I think a large part of that is due to the internet.
That's interesting because one of the things I wanted to talk about was the sort of streaming boom we're in now, and specifically with comedy. And you smirk over there. do you think there's something specific about comedy as a genre? I know it has very nuanced and smaller aspects of it in itself, but on a bigger picture, what is it about comedy that seems to sort of be passed around? Was it just timing, or is it something in and of itself?
I was kind of skeptical. I've been a skeptic of pay TV for, you know, the last couple of years since Netflix and since I cut the cord. I was seeing so many quality shows that you could get without having cable.
Yeah, I think it's just an exposure thing. I really do. I mean, there's no way that people can look at some great, great comedians and not see artistry there. I think they just never realized it until the internet made it available.
And so it seems natural that the next step would be for a big company like NBC to get involved.
Well, NBC is interesting, and I don't know how much in the weeds of sort of the business part of it you want to get. But I mean, NBC Universal is part of Comcast, and so that's a very authentication / TV everywhere oriented company.
When did you first hear about CISO and what were your initial thoughts?
Pretty early. I mean, I saw some of the initial material. I don't remember if it was a press release from NBC or something I read in one of the trades. But I mean, as soon as it was announced, it was something that I started following. I mean, I think my first curiosity was how is a company that is, you know, more oriented toward authentication than any of the other major media companies gonna do a freestanding streaming service?
Oh, let's see. There were always kind of like rumors of, yeah, there's gonna be a new thing with these classic, great, you get your everything from Monty Python to the 30 Rocks and all the SNLs in between. And
content-wise, the catalog stuff is good. I mean, I don't know. Like a lot of the British stuff I have not seen. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff there that I could see. I don't know how much of the U.S. catalog is you know, of interest to me because I've seen every episode of a lot of what they've got.
Yeah, it's The Office's.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen every episode of The Office. I've seen every episode of Parks and Recreation. I've seen every episode of 30 Rock. There's not a lot of the domestic stuff that I'm going to be interested in. The originals, I think, have been interesting. They are, to me, for the most part, counter-programming what anybody else is doing. There are a few of those shows that maybe feel like, oh, okay, this could have worked on Comedy Central, or this could have worked on, you know, like Flowers. I could totally see something like Flowers on Sundance. Could totally see something like Bajillion on Comedy Central, but a lot of the stuff like ThingStarter, like New York's Funniest, I don't know where I would see that except on something like this. Dave and Ethan is a great concept and a great sort of comedy / special / game show kind of setup. It seems like that it could only exist something on a platform like this. And I mean, maybe that's the maybe that's the idea. I think that's probably one of their better shows of this first batch of originals.
I don't think this idea of creating shows that can only exist here or that are unique to the platform is an accident.
There's so much content on CISO now that is coming from a place of community. These shows, UCB or even, you know, Wyatt's Next Night Train, that have these followings that, you know, just attract people constantly. They're introduced to artists they might not have heard of, concepts. You know, the idea of blowing out the parameters of what is allowed and what isn't, I think is really what it is setting CISO apart. So you kind of are attracted by the classic shows, but now you're staying for, you know, something that came from the Virgil out here in LA. Littlefield in Brooklyn, you know, UCB Theater. Like, these are things you can actually now go to in real life that you might not have known about before CISO.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about it that way, is that it's sort of representing these physical places and these physical communities.
You know, when you're talking about hooking people with these new comedic ideas that they can watch on their screen and then go live in real life and actually feel this vibe and being part of that community and, you know, the interactions that only happen in real life in that moment at a live show. There's definitely something special happening there. It's not just about, you know, nostalgia or keeping track of, you know, this show, that show, XYZ. It's about the discovery process too.
Yeah, and there seems to be, off of that, there seems to be so much overlap, for better or for worse, with even actors and actresses, you know, playing different roles on different shows and stuff like that too. So they're even trying to cultivate that community, even on top of the community that's already been cultivated.
Yeah, the idea of anyone being just a stand-up or just a UCB person or just a comedic actor or actress is not particularly relevant, I don't think, anymore. It's all, you know, integrated, and when you kind of have that different sort of collaborative system, you can theoretically get the best product.
To me, Bajillion Dollar Properties is, I mean, I think they're lodestar right now. I think it's a fantastic show. I'm really looking forward to the second season of it. You know, if you look at Shapiro's history.
You remember Evan Shapiro? We had him on episode 9, and he's the exec VP of digital at NBC. One of the guys who helped create CISO.
I don't remember if we talked about it specifically, but it would appear to come directly out of his relationship with Scott Aukerman from IFC. And so, I mean, those are the kinds of relationships that are, you know, probably going to continue to, you know, pay dividends as he goes forward. I thoroughly enjoyed every episode of the first season and really looking forward to the second season of that.
The original shiz. Well, of course, there's the Night Train with Wyatt Cenac, which I was at a few tapings of.
I look like a fool on television. These people don't like me. It's my damn show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Night Train!
Yeah, we can jump in and talk about that. You just wrote an article. And you did you follow him around or just talk with him?
I did follow him around. I was in, it's a bit of a long story. I, at the time, had been doing a bunch of cover profiles for the Village Voice on people like Michael Che and Bridget Everett. And I had pitched the fact that Wyatt Cenac was going to be having this new show that had not necessarily been announced yet. It was kind of a rumor, hearsay. I had industry sources, and everything was kind of a go to put him on the cover of the Village Voice. And this was also particularly time sensitive because it was shortly after the WTF with Marc Maron episode, in which Wyatt had described how Jon Stewart and him had not necessarily got along too well. And then the Village Voice got bought out just before I was going to fly from LA to New York to attend the CISO tapings in December. And then after I'd completed the story, all of my editors got fired from the Village Voice. And my 5,000 words on Wyatt Cenac did not have a home anymore. And then once the CISO date was finally announced for Night Train, then I found a home for the piece at Paste.
What maybe surprised you from your time with Wyatt?
He's a very serious person. He definitely has a lot of deep-rooted opinions, but they are all very influenced by the life he's lived. And he's also very committed to his own vision. He knows what he wants to do and the way in which he wants to do it. And when the compromises are too great, he will walk away. And not a lot of artists will do that. That's actually pretty much what sets him apart as an artist, in terms of someone who is not going to sell out to the man. So with something like Night Train or any of his other writing projects, you get a much more unfiltered sense of just what goes on in his head. And I think that's included in, you know, how we are looking at comedy today. When you actually start talking to these comedians about their lives and what they've been through and their perspective on the world and the things that need to be changed in it, there are going to be a lot of things that surprise you. And then when you can kind of put them in context with what they're saying on stage, it just, there's something about it that really connects with people more so than music and film with all the bells and whistles.
Yeah, it just struck me when you were talking, and let's say there's this, I don't even know how to describe it, but this upper echelon of comedians or whatever, the good ones, just the blanket term, when they're at their best, the most realized, whatever. It's interesting because it seems like there's a lot of individuality, and that's what we like about it. But at the same time, there's also this connection and this community, like we talked about earlier. And even you talking about that, Wyatt Snacks doing CISO show, but he's also got this Conoco production. There's this ability to sort of live and wear these different hats, but not, again, at the best of times, there's not like competition or frustration at each other, and you can do this. I mean, do you see, let me put it this way. I mean, what I'm seeing in comedy right now is sort of the high tide raises all ships sort of thing. I mean, do you feel like that's happening sort of in comedy? Is that maybe what sets... No, I don't know if it sets it apart, but I don't know where I'm going with this.
I just think there's something about connecting with a comedian on stage when they say something that you think you're in a minority for thinking or feeling or wanting, and you realize you're not, and you realize that all these people laughing around you have some common ground. And comedy as a whole for sure does that.
Even when you're alone. Yeah. Like if you're listening to it on your headphones or something, you can still feel like you're a part of that community that you're hearing.
I mean, also kind of conversely, when you're hearing someone's opinions who you don't necessarily agree with and you kind of are taking the medicine in with the honey, for example, you can kind of start to understand how other people think. And if you don't agree with them, you understand this human baseline that we all want certain things and need certain things, and there are reasons for them. We might not completely understand the reasons, but we're kind of all in this together, and these opinions are uniting us in ways that some pop song we might all sing along, but do we really go home and start to think about our lives because of that?
Transcendence, yeah, of some sort. Yeah. It just takes us to that.
And there's just something about standing in the back of a comedy club and watching all these people laugh that never fails to make me a bit more optimistic about humanity.
So I guess the big question is, will CISO survive?
I'm sure as comedy fans, we all hope so. It's an interesting experiment. It's only been around, you know, officially since January, so it's certainly too soon to tell anything.
You know, we're in this really splintered environment right now where it may just be a function of, can they take X number of subscribers generating, you know, Y dollars and continue that as an ongoing business? I mean, I guess we'll find out when they announce their their subscription numbers in December or January, whenever they're going to, I think Shapiro had said they're going to announce those at the end of the year. None of the streaming services that have announced subscription numbers beyond the big three have really had any impressive numbers yet. You know, HBO Now's numbers were not that great. I mean, you could attribute that to there being so many other ways to subscribe to, you know, HBO. But, you know, I mean, Hulu has got better programming than Netflix by far. And it doesn't have anywhere near the subscription numbers because that content is available elsewhere. So, I mean, they're basically operating from a market of cord cutters. And I don't know. I mean, I think there's just so many different business plans out there right now. It's difficult to see what's going to shake out. I haven't seen, I mean, from what I've seen of CISO so far and what I've seen of their marketing, they haven't put a ton of money in it. I mean, I'm not seeing a lot of, you know, expensive advertising for it. None of the shows look particularly expensive. So, I mean, I would say it's probably an NBC Universal experiment as much as anything else right now to sort of start up the metrics engine and see how people are watching these things. So I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen one of these yet that looks like it has really, really taken off.
Do you have any thoughts about subscription versus ad supported?
I much prefer subscription, but it sounds like from Hulu's upfronts announcement that their new subscribers are skewing toward the ad supported version. I mean, this was a presentation for advertisers, so I don't know how much that sort of influenced the way they were presenting the information, but I was very, very surprised to hear that. I would have guessed 75% of their new subscribers were going for the $12 version because it's, you know, $4 to not have to watch ads. That just seems like a really, really easy call to me. So, I mean, I think there's definitely, it sounds like, I mean, at least as far as Hulu is concerned, there's two models out there and there are viewers for both. I don't understand the ad-supported part.
This is something I talked about with Evan Shapiro also, the difference between subscription and ad-supported. You know, there's an analogy that could be made between cable and network TV and public and private radio. And it's even something you see in podcasting. Some networks and shows will have ads run during their episodes. And then other networks like Radiotopia are more listener-supported, where they give reoccurring donations to support the show.
The biggest piece of resistance moving forward is getting people all over the country to jump onto the site and on the platform and take out their credit card and pay. I think that's, to me, the scariest part of it. I think if you look at Radiotopia and you look at shows like 99% Invisible or Theory of Everything or The Illusionist, Memory Palace, you know, I think it's hard to argue with the level of artistry that they're attaining right now.
Yeah.
You know, that's where having a transactional relationship with the audience, where they're subscribing or not on a monthly basis, you know, it, to me, is much more important than a Nielsen number. It's not even really counting the people who are watching. It's an aggregation or it's an extrapolation of 25,000 homes who are hand-selected by Nielsen. This is, I'm voting with my Apple Pay every month, and if you don't satisfy me, I'm going to take my chips and go. It's nerve-wracking as shit, to be honest with you, but at the same time, you know, I started in theater. I knew during a show whether it was working or not, because people were either leaving or clapping. And I'm both very, very nervous for and very, very desirous to get back to that one-on-one relationship.
I think on the platform side, I'm interested to see if the land grab has already ended. And it may have. You know, it may be that there isn't a stomach for these $4 and $5 a month services, because the, you know, you can spend, I don't know, $20, $22 a month and get Netflix, Amazon, and Hulu, and that might be all you need. Or maybe you add, you know, HBO or Showtime or one of the other services, but they may have eaten up the real estate already. I mean, it may just be in a 400 show universe. You know, I think that was the latest count, something like 400 or 425 shows this year. I write about TV for a living and I can't keep up with it. So, you know, you're going to get to a point where there's, you know, that there's great shows you can't always get to. And that might be reason enough to not give a new platform a chance.
I mean, I think it's just getting wider and wider for sure. And possibly like music, you'll have factions start splitting a little bit more in terms of genre or style, content, that kind of thing. But I think it's just a lot more inclusive, comprehensive, and will only continue to be, both in terms of content and platforms. The things you can hear and the ways in which you can hear them are probably going to fill every nook and cranny for whoever is out there who wants to hear it. There, no rules, and I think we're probably all going to be better for it, just in terms of like finding what we like and supporting the artists who affect us.
I mean, it may turn out that we're not at, you know, that sort of capacity point yet. But I think if it does turn out that a lot of these smaller services just don't find a big audience, I think that'll be the reason. You know, it's just too much to keep up with, and I've got the five or six, you know, major services. That's the biggest thing I'm interested to see is the door closed already?
Well, there's certainly too much to keep up with. You know, everybody's seasons behind this show and can't catch up with all their favorite podcasts. But the fact that all these options are out there is certainly laudable. But maybe that's a good problem to have. To know there's stuff out there that you definitely want to dedicate yourself to more than other things. Yeah, I think too much comedy is perhaps a good problem to have.
Special thanks this week to Scott Porch and Julie Seebaugh. If you'd like to read more of their work, Scott recently had interviews with Michael Ian Black, Chris Hardwick, and Nikki Glaser for Playboy. Plus, you can find a lot of his other work online.
It's at scottporch.com.
And you can head over to julieseebaugh.com to find more of her work.
Most recently, I had the Wyatt profile, 5,000 words for Paste magazine, and I am currently finishing up part 3 of a 3-part Comedy Central oral history for the AV Club, going back through all 25 years of its existence so far. That's taken up a lot of my time. I haven't had smaller pieces in the meantime, and that's actually going to take me through next month. After that, send your offers my way.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear the Evan Shapiro episode or any other episode, you can just search the CISO C-Show on the podcatcher of your choice. We also tweet at CISO Show, that's S-E-E-S-O Show, and have a website, CISOshow.com. Until next time, have a great day.